Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 24th podcast I've recorded. I'm recording it on Monday, October 13th. The PE10 value this morning was 15, which is fair value. And I'm recording this at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Stocks were going up earlier this morning. They were up by about 500 points. So we're still at 15 or possibly a low 16, but we're still certainly at fair value. As of today, October 13th, prices have been changing quickly. By the time you hear this, I don't know where we'll be. The title of this one is, It Takes a Community to Fix What's Wrong with Stock Investing Today. This is an issue near and dear to my heart. If you look down the left-hand side of any page at my website, you'll see the buttons that you push to get to the various sections. And one of those sections is called Community Rules. Community Rules. And I came up with that little catchphrase for a thread that I wrote at the Motley Fool board at the time when this was years ago. This was 2002. I think it was probably early December of 2002. So a long time ago. But this was the early days of the great safe withdrawal rate debate. And in the very early days, we had tons of positive, constructive comments. And then when it became clear that there was no hope for the people who were defending the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies we all use to plan our retirements. These studies are used almost universally in all retirement planning advice you hear. When we had shown beyond any reasonable doubt that those studies were wrong, the board became this small group of abusive posters just went on a destroy mission against our discussion board. And one of the threads I wrote was community rules, that we need to work together as a community, that we should have people in the community. There are people who believe in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies today. There's no question about that. And if they sincerely believe that, they should be participating in our discussions. We need to hear what they have to say. But of course, we also need to hear from the people who understand the flaws in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. And the way a community works is as these two different perspectives are aired, all the people in the middle who are not so sure, which is usually most people on most issues, there are people on both extremes that feel very sure of their position, and then there are people, the majority are going to tend to be in the middle on any question that comes up. And they listen to both sides and they decide for themselves, and over time they adjust their views in one direction or the other. And if you call these battles of ideas just continue indefinitely. They never end. There's never going to be a time on planet Earth when we are all going to say, oh, we've settled it all. I remember there was a guy who he wrote a paper, I think it was an academic paper or something, the end of history, and this was back, I think, when the fall of communism in Russia, and the premise was, that Western, capitalism, whatever, had proven itself the best method of politics and economics, and we had reached the end of all these discussions. I didn't read the article. I'm sure that there were good points made in the article, but the basic premise I do not buy. I don't think there's ever going to be a time when all the great questions of history have been settled. When it appears that they are settled, it does mean something. It means that something has been resolved. But humans are always going to push forward. They're always going to move on to something else. And so when one group of problems is settled, new battlegrounds open up. And this is just the nature of life, in my opinion. It's the nature of life. So today the battle is, you could say the battle is the battle over safe withdrawal rates? It's not really. The thing that we call the great safe withdrawal rate continues to this day, but the battle over whether the safe withdrawal rate studies were analytically valid or not was settled years ago. And the debate today is, can we say that? Can that be spoken? So the battle has just sort of turned to a different question. It started out being about substance, and it ended up being about process. But when the process question is settled, when it's been resolved, as I believe ultimately it will be, that we will allow honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related questions at all the various retire early and indexing boards, a new front in the battle will open up. Then rational investing will be on the table and we'll be able to openly discuss it. And guess what? We're going to find things out about rational investing that show areas where it needs to be improved. I've put forward ideas for the rational investing model, but I'm one person sitting in a room somewhere thinking great thoughts, and that doesn't work. So my point here is that community is a player. This isn't the passive investors versus the rational investors, or the old school safe withdrawal rate proponents versus the new school safe withdrawal rate proponents, or the people who think it's certainly not the bulls versus the bears, or the people who think valuations matter versus the people who think valuations don't matter that much. There are people on both of those sides of the question, but there's a third player, and that third player is the community itself. The community has a place at the table as a whole. And the community never has one point of view. This is a pet peeve of mine. People will see, let's say we're at the Vanguard Diehards board, and people show an interest in hearing about valuation-informed indexing, the approach to indexing I recommend at my site. And some passive investors jump in. They become highly abusive trying to shut that down. And the people who want to hear about valuation-informed indexing become intimidated, and they become silenced. And the passive investors dominate, so that all you can hear is passive investing, the passive indexing, let's say, the passive approach to indexing. And the other side is silenced, is squelched. That people will come back, and even friends of mine, people that are friendly to me, people who are supportive, will say, "Oh, Rob, the Vanguard Diehards board, the Vanguard Diehards are they're dogmatic, and they're stupid, they're unethical, they're wrong, they're whatever, they're bad people, but they're not." You can say, individual posters who post abusively, you can argue, are misinformed or rude or, overbearing, certainly dogmatic. You can make these statements about individuals or groups of individuals. You can say 20% of the board community is that way. But you can't ever say what the entire community is unless the entire community is able to speak for itself. Once a large segment of the community is silenced, the community is not being fairly represented. So I've never bought into this idea of damning entire board communities, especially when abusive posting has been permitted to poison the atmosphere in the community. So what I've always been in favor of is reasonable administration of the published site rules that prohibit abusive posting. We have those rules at every one of the retire early boards, every one of the indexing boards. And if those rules are enforced in a reasonable manner, the community searches. The community is on a quest for truth, ultimately. And the community searches for it, and the community gets there. As long as the community is protected from those who abuse the community's good favor, those who post deceptively or engage in intimidation tactics, those people are really out. They remove themselves from the community. They're outside of the community because they violated the community norms. But the community needs to be protected from them. If they're not protected, these people can do great harm in a short amount of time. But as long as the community is protected, the community will move in a good direction, I believe. Now, that doesn't mean every move is in a good direction. Obviously, there are times when communities go in bad directions. We see this in the big world. You know, we see it in the United States, or we see it in the global community. You know, you see it among mankind and womankind. But I guess the way to think about it is that there's good and there's bad inside people. And so there's a pull towards the good at all times, and there's a pull towards the bad at all times. And there's a tug of war being waged at all times between good and bad, you know, intelligence and ignorance, repression and free speech, you know, all these things. They're all being fought in any community. And those rules don't go by the wayside when you start a discussion board community and you know, on the internet. It's the same dynamic. And so the same rules that we apply in governing ourselves as a nation, a very large community of hundreds of millions, those same basic rules, I believe, should apply when we govern ourselves in a discussion board community. And that means we should allow free speech, which means different people should be able to express different viewpoints. And we should have protections, so that when outlier personalities come in and they engage in actions that destroy the fabric of the community, there's a police force to call, and that police force handles those people. So that's my belief, and I had that belief from the first day. I think it would be fair to say I was the primary person who built up the Retire Early Board at the Motley Fool Board. It was founded by John Graney. He's the one who put up the first post and asked that the community be discussion board be founded. But it wasn't really a community when John started it. It was pretty much John's safe withdrawal rate study and a few other related topics. And I came in not too long after that and started posting about a wider range of topics, and that's what made the community blossom. Because we were reaching out to people. Most of the community never even cared about safe withdrawal rates. Most of them cared about, you know, there's all kinds of issues under the heading early retirement. There's 100 issues. And so we started pulling in all these diverse viewpoints on all sorts of diverse topics. And that's what made that community so exciting. And, so that's always been my vision. Not to have a community that of robots, say, that, you know, says, oh, Rob Bennett is the best, you know. To me, that is boring and stupid and offensive. But a community that has people in it, that some of whom say Rob Bennett is the best, and some of whom say I can't stand Rob Bennett, and some of whom say, well, Rob Bennett's got his good and bad points. That's a living community. That's a healthy community, in my view. So the point here, though, the title of this podcast is, it takes a community to fix what's wrong with investing today. So I've learned a lot of what I know today about how stock investing works through my participation in communities, the sorts of things I've been talking about here in the early minutes of this podcast. And of course, if you know any of our history, what's happened is we had this thriving community, this wonderful community of at the Motley Fool Board, all talking about different topics relating to early retirement. And then the safe withdrawal rate issue came up as a result of my post in May of 2002. And then we had a choice. We had huge interest in taking the community in this exciting new direction where we were going to learn about the realities of stock investing. We were going to leave the passive investing model behind and move on to a more emotionally balanced model, the rational investing model. And we had another group that very, very, very much did not want to go there. And so this friction developed. And that friction has now extended into, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 different communities over the past 6 years. And it still dominates all of our boards today. All of our boards today have either been destroyed, several have been burned to the ground, or they've imposed a ban on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related questions so that they are corrupt institutions. Any community that bans honest posting on critical questions is a corrupt enterprise. So that doesn't mean they don't produce anything good. Many of these, not many, there are a number of these communities, and many is not, there's not enough to say many. But all of the communities that ban honest posting produce some good work. Some of them produce a lot of good work. But they can only go so far because they are corrupt enterprises, because they do not allow honest posting on safe withdrawal rates or on these other valuation-related questions, which came up as a result of our safe withdrawal rate discussions. The discussions expanded into all sorts of areas. And when you ban honest posting, you're banning intelligence and you're banning integrity, and you become a corrupt institution. So you're not here, you're not listening to this podcast to learn about the political battles in the retire early community or in the indexing community. You're here to learn about how to invest in stocks. And if you're listening to this in October of 2008, you're probably listening to find out, what do I do about this crash in stock prices? Well, what I say is, you need to be better informed. If the way to take care of yourself in a crash or in a non-crash, the way to take care of yourself across the board is to be informed. But one of the problems we have in trying to get people better informed is we have misperceptions. Many of us have misperceptions about how one goes about becoming well informed. And I am a big believer that you can only become, I hope I don't overstate this. If I do, forgive me. But I'll try to state it as well as I can. But I believe this strongly, so I have to state it somewhat strongly. I don't believe in the model of the what should we call it? There's sort of a model people use to talk about how progress is achieved, and they sort of talk about heroic individuals. Ayn Rand was famous for this. I'm a big fan of Ayn Rand's novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. I read Atlas Shrugged 3 times, and it's a long novel. I'm a big fan of hers. But Ayn Rand, She's a big believer in this heroic individual. Frank Lloyd Wright was her hero, the heroic individual who disdains almost all humanity, really. I mean, Ayn Rand came pretty close to disdaining all humanity. I love her, okay? I there are things Ayn Rand said that are dear to my heart, and if I start talking about Ayn Rand, I'll go off on a tangent, unfortunately. But I can't resist. One of the funniest stories I've ever. You might have to be an Ayn Rand fan to appreciate this, but it's one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. Ayn Rand, you almost have to know her personality to appreciate this, but she's dead. She's not alive today, but she was a brilliant person, and I think a brilliant novelist. Some people make fun of her novels on grounds that the characters are sort of stock characters or something. I don't really go for that. I know what they're getting at, but her novels were more novels of ideas. And the ideas, the way she illustrated the ideas was very compelling. I think she did a very good job. And her novels had great influence. She's sort of one of the founders of the libertarian political philosophy. So she had great influence. And people loved her novels. Her novels often got poor reviews, but sold huge numbers of quantities. So there was something very real going on there. But she was a very, people were angry at her, and she sort of got angry back, and she wasn't a compromising individual. She was rather arrogant. And so she would just say, I'm right. So the antagonism sort of grew over time, and she was bitter. I think she was bitter especially in her old age, that a lot of people critics did not like her novels, things along those lines. But this funny story is, at one point, and she would go on rants. You know, she was definitely a ranting sort of individual. And if you like her, you know, you listen to the rant and you say, oh, you know, it's sort of charming. But of course, if you don't like her, you say that's a crazy person. You could go either way, and both things were true. I think she had an awful lot to offer. She taught me a lot of things, and so I have fondness for her in my heart. But she clearly, if you read her biography, it's hard for me to imagine you wouldn't come to the conclusion that she had her crazy, you know, moments. But so this Cub Scout came to her apartment in, I think it was in New York. And, you know, he was selling magazines. You know, they send you out to raise money for the Cub Scouts to sell these magazine subscriptions. And he says, he didn't know who he was talking to. He just knocks on the door and says, oh, you know, you want to buy one of these magazines? And Ayn Rand sees that one of the magazines is Time. You know, and Time had written this very, very harsh review of Atlas Shrugged. And she picks it up and she says, do you know what these people say about me? You know, have you ever read this magazine? Do you know what kind of people it are that, you know, that work here? And she's ranting, you know, I'm not going to buy any magazines from you. And, you know, why don't you do something worthwhile with your life? You know, and she's ranting at this poor Cub Scout. So anyway, I just, you know, she didn't hurt the Cub. If she hurt him, it wouldn't be funny, but she just yelled at him. And I think it's funny. And I can see Ayn Rand doing it. You know, it's, you see, she's, I'll end this because I know it's off topic, but she was, she felt things strongly. She felt things strongly. And she had a different way of looking at the world than most people. I think she felt very alone. Ayn Rand was, she was raised in Russia. And she's in communist Russia, and she was very anti-communist. So, you know, she had to escape that, and she had to learn the language here and all these sorts of things. And so she had a lot to overcome. And we all need, in a way this does relate, we all need community. We all need people around us. I think if you're going to say Ayn Rand became sort of crazy at times, you have to... If you're going to say so in charity, if you're going to try to understand why that happened, one of the reasons it happened is that she was an intellectual giant. I don't think that's an overstatement. She was certainly highly intelligent. I think she was an intellectual giant. And she just understood things other people didn't understand. And that can be a lonely endeavor. There's another funny story about that. In the movie, it's one of my favorite movies ever, Broadcast News, and there's the woman played by Helen Hunt, and she's she works in TV journalism, you know, in the nightly news, and she's not the anchor, she's behind the scenes producer type, and but she doesn't like this trend of the cutesy news. She wants hard news, you know, coverage of international events and so forth. And she's always pushing for that, and you know, no one will listen to her. Everyone else is saying, yeah, we like the cutesy stuff. You know, that's good, you know. And so, you know, she really believes, she loves her job, and she loves what she's doing, and she believes it's important. And it drives her a little crazy. And, you know, there were two lines in the movie that are just wonderful. One, she's talking to her friend and explaining her problem, and she says, you know, I've reached a point where I am beginning to repulse people that I'm trying to seduce, because she had this man in her apartment, and you know, she started ranting, and he, you know, he left, and she's sad about it. She knows she does it, but she can't help it. Another case of it was somebody, you know, she was giving her opinions on what they should do in the news, and the executive who was higher than her said, "Oh, it must be wonderful to always know you're right." And she looked at him, you know, and there was sort of a second or two pause, and she says, "Oh no, it's terrible. It's horrible," you know. And so that's Ayn Rand. You know, that's Ayn Rand. She knows what's right. Now, of course, she really doesn't. The sad part of all this is she really doesn't know what's right, and the Helen Hunt character really doesn't know what's right about TV news. But these people think they do, and they're smart. They're not dumb. It's not like they're ignorant. In neither case were these ignorant people. They were smart. And maybe they were right. I'm not saying they were wrong. I'm just saying we don't really know who's right. No one is God. No one here, I call it the Valley of Tears. There's a Catholic prayer that talks about the Valley of Tears, and the phrase makes me laugh. Every time I hear it, I've heard the phrase 1,000 times, and every time I hear it, it makes me smile. It's so Catholic to talk about Earth as the Valley of Tears. It's so anti-modern life. You know, we always try to talk about how life is about swimming pools and sunny days and all this. And that's sort of how I am. I take, you know, I call my book Passion Saving. You know, it's right up that alley. But the Catholic Church pulls me down and says, "You're in a valley of tears, buddy. Get used to it, you know. Unto dust thou shalt return," and they slap your face. And so I laugh. I think it's funny. But that's part of my makeup. That I can go on and on about how achieving financial freedom early in life is going to open up your opportunities. It's going to let you do what you want to do. Get your personality out there, man, you know. And at the same time, there's this undercurrent that in my thinking that says, Valley of Tears, you're walking through the Valley of Tears. And no matter what you build up, no matter how hot you think you are, you can get pulled down in a second. And the truth there, the truth that the Catholic Church is teaching us, Sister Mary Margaret would be very proud of me, the truth that the Catholic Church is teaching us is, it's humility. You know, that's one of the virtues, and that we can lose sight of. And you know, pulling it back to investing advice. Well, what do you like in an investing advisor? You like humble? You like your investing advisor to go out on the stage and say, "Oh, it's so confusing. I don't know what's going on. I you might want to buy stocks, but you might want to sell. Who knows? You know, are you going to hire that guy? That's humble. But it ain't going to sell. What sells is these guys that come out and they want to speak with certainty. And the problem is, here's a phrase that I use. Our knowledge of how investing works is primitive. That's what I say from time to time. And I believe that. It's primitive. And so anyone who's standing up there telling you he knows it all is off base. But if you want to sell, you got to do that. And that's why we have all these charts and tables and studies and all this gibberish, you know. I don't go for that. I love studies. How many times have I said John Walter Russell's site, my favorite site on the internet, It's all studies. It's all investing studies. But I love it. So it's not that I'm against studies. It's that I'm against believing that any study is ever going to settle the question. What studies do is they add to our knowledge. And we have to keep our humility in order to advance, in order to learn in depth. You see, if you take a study and you take a sentence out, you say, this is the summary. This is the executive summary of the study. It'll be one sentence. From Rob Bennett's point of view, that one sentence is going to be wrong, no matter what the sentence is. If the sentence is passive investing, the sentence is, there is no need to change your stock allocation when prices are high. Now, you know I disagree with that, as strongly as anyone could disagree with anything. So obviously, I say that sentence is wrong. Now, reverse it. Say, there is a need to adjust your stock allocation when prices get high. Well, I agree with that very, very strongly. But if you put me to the test, if everybody out in the world were saying that today, I'll bet that what I would end up taking the other side. You'll say I'm contrary, and there's some truth in that. I have a contrary way of looking at the world. Not that I want to be disagreeable. I like to get along with people. I like to be, you know, I like positive, friendly interactions. But there's no question but that there's something in my mind that when any wisdom becomes too conventional, too widely accepted, there's just a bell that rings in my head that says, slow down. We never know everything. Slow down. Check it out. Be sure. And of course, sometimes I don't find any flaws. Sometimes, you know, everybody's saying something, you know, going to the beach is fun. Most people think going to the beach is fun. I've tested it out. I agree. Going to the beach is fun. So I'm not going to fight you on that one. But it is the sort of thing I would check out. It's the sort of thing, if too many people say it, it just rubs me the wrong way, and I start thinking about why. You know, what makes beach going so great? And I'll sort of, my mind will try to untangle what's going on, and if it checks out, I just won't say anything. I don't bother to put up a post somewhere saying the beach is fun, and, you know, be a waste of time. Everybody knows that. But if I find out that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the number wrong, I put it up. You know, I put it up, and we see what the reaction is. And what I'm getting at here, I'm sort of circling around, and hopefully I'm going to drill to the center soon. What I'm getting at is, we are flawed humans. The book I'm working on investing is called Investing for Humans. And the, you know, the title's not an accident. It means something. There's a joke to the title. You know, it's a play on the, you know, investing for dummies, computers for dummies, you know, house building for dummies. So I call it Investing for Humans. But there's a serious side to it, which is that I don't think today's investing advice is fitting for humans. And that's true for many different reasons. But one reason is, it is too arrogant. It is too full of itself. It is too pretentious in its pretensions to science. If there's anything about passive investing that drives me bonkers, it's when advocates of passive investing say, oh, this is a science. And this just happened on the Bogleheads board a week or two ago. Someone was saying, maybe we should open this board up to different viewpoints. Maybe we're too dogmatic. We're going to go over a cliff. And Taylor Larimore, the co-author of the Bogleheads Guide to Investing, comes on and says, oh, no. We don't need to hear different ideas because we're right. We know we're right because we're science. We're a science. We're the only people that know the answers to investing. Nobody else does because they're not science, but we are. Ugh. It makes me want to throw up. And Taylor's, in relative terms, he's a nice guy. I had some good interactions with Taylor. But Oh, I can't stand that stuff. I can't stand it. And there are people who will accuse me of it. They'll say, Rob is so strident in his criticisms of passive investing. Rob believes rational investing is the sun, the moon, and the stars. I do. I believe rational investing is right, and I believe passive investing is wrong. So in that sense, yes, in that sense, I'm like Taylor. Taylor believes what he's saying, and Rob Bennett believes what he's saying, and we believe opposite things. So all that is fair. But where it's not fair is I can interact in a discussion board community with Taylor Larimore and never have a problem. I'm not going to call Taylor a troll because he supports passive investing. I'm not going to smear him. I'm not going to try to intimidate him. I say, Taylor, friend, and not sarcastically, warmly. And why am I warm to Taylor Larimore? Because Taylor Larimore can teach me. He has a set of life experiences different than the set of life experiences Rob Bennett has. And therefore, he can tap into things that I can't tap into. And so, if I am rude to him and I cause him to be quiet when I'm in the room, I lose out on that. So I want to hear what he has to say. I certainly want the right to challenge him and to probe and to question. And I, frankly, I insist on that right. I don't just ask for it, I insist on it. But and the statement I make is I post honestly or I post not. If I am in a discussion board community with Terrell Larimore and he makes a threat, Rob, if you question me one more time, I'm going to go to Morningstar and get you removed. I say, Taylor, and this is just what I do, and I'm famous for it, and you can check the record. I'll say, Taylor, I like seeing your post. I like learning from you. I disagree with you. I'm going to continue to state the other point of view. I have an obligation to my fellow community members to do so, and I have an obligation to myself to do so, and I have an obligation to you to do so. It would be insulting to you if I were to permit you to silence me. And if you want to go to Morningstar, you're of course free to do so. The Morningstar rules permit me to question you and to disagree with you, and I will continue to do so. And if Morningstar bans me from this forum because I disagreed with Taylor Larimore, I will question Morningstar. I will say Morningstar is in the wrong. But I will continue to post, and I will continue to post honestly until that action is taken. Because until that action is taken, I don't know that Morningstar will do that. You are saying they will do it. I need to have them say it, or I cannot accuse Morningstar of being unwilling to allow alternate viewpoints. I can only accuse Taylor Larimore of doing that as of today. And then I go on about my business. But that's the. I'm telling you this to get across what I mean when I say community. Community means something to me. I'm sure other people get this, but not many people seem to talk about it. Many people seem nervous about talking about it. Many people probably haven't thought it through. Many people are at these boards to obtain the investing advice, and they have no interest in the, this is called board politics, what I'm talking about. Board politics matters because it doesn't matter who's up and who's down, but what matters is what's permitted and what's not. Because if questioning isn't permitted, a board can never achieve its potential. And a board is, I had, oh, there's a guy, drip guy, at the Goon Central board, and he said the other week, just a few days ago, he said it's just a bunch of X's and O's. Not, I don't know, X's and O's, zeros and ones. It's a bunch of zeros and ones. His point is anything that appears on the screen of a computer is just, electronic impulses, that we're sending out over the telephone wires. And so it doesn't matter if we're honest or dishonest. It makes no difference. It doesn't matter if we get the safe withdrawal rate wrong or right. Who cares? It's O's and ones. That is as far removed from Rob Bennett's viewpoint as you could get. That's a different universe. Rob Bennett's viewpoint is it's people. It's people that read these boards. And so we should care about getting it right. And if we intimidate one group of people and silence them, that's a bad thing. And it's bad not just for the one silenced, it's bad for everyone, because we all need to hear everyone's viewpoint in order to advance in our understanding. The best understanding of this came in a book. You know, I saw this affirmed, this idea I have, affirmed in a book called The Wisdom of Crowds. I think it's called The Wisdom of Crowds. And it was based on an old book. And I'm trying to think what the title. It was basically a play on an old book title. Was it The Madness of Crowds? I feel like I've gotten it wrong. I'm drawing a blank on it. But there's an old book that basically says, you know, crowds are wrong. Communities get things wrong, suggesting that what we need are smart individual leaders. They get things right, and we should follow them. But what the crowd thinks, I think it was The Madness of Crowds, the crowds get it wrong. And this book came out recently, and it argued, you know, several years ago, but fairly recently, argued that no, communities are more intelligent than the most intelligent members of that community. It's a totally counterintuitive argument. But the guy, I haven't read the whole book, unfortunately. I got started on it, and I got pulled away, and I want to get back to it. It's a very interesting book. But the argument is totally counterintuitive. You would certainly think that the smartest person in a community is smarter than the community as a whole, because the community as a whole is a mix of smart and dumb. But no, and this guy gives examples where they ask very smart people to figure something out, you know, figure out some sort of, I don't know, there were some examples where they were trying to figure out where a sunken ship was buried or something. And, you know, they had all these really smart people try to figure it out, and they couldn't do it, or they were wrong. They were wrong in their calculations. And then they had a community of people do it, smart and dumb, and they got much closer to the correct answer. That sort of thing. That's his argument. And one of the arguments he uses for showing how intelligent communities are is the stock market. What he essentially argues is that this is the efficient market theory, which, you know that I hate the efficient market theory if you listen to any of my stuff, but I think this is the best argument for the efficient market theory I've ever read. I like the argument in this book a lot. But he argues that, you know, if you went to the smartest person, you know, Warren Buffett or Jack Bogle, or, you know, the head of some big fund, whatever it would be, and you tell him, you ask him, what should the market price be today? And he gives you an answer. It won't be as good as the answer that the market comes up with, because the market has a more diverse group of inputs. Even though some of those inputs are dumb people, you know, foolish people, it doesn't matter. There's an advantage to acting. There's an advantage in processing information to being a community. And that's an idea that I relate to very, very well. And I feel like I live it. I live it. It's the story of my personal finance, my career writing about personal finance. I have a book out, Passion Saving. And if you ever happen to read it, you will see in the introduction I talk about that Motley Fool board community, because I started researching the book, 1992, you know, and it came out in 2005, July of 2005. So I had years and years of research. There was a lot of work I did on my own. You know, I put all my budgets together, all this thing. I mean, all of that are different ways of learning about saving. But a big part of what I learned was what I learned in that community, and both from people that agreed with me and people that disagreed. But the feedback mechanism, that's what I'm talking about. You can't get that sitting in a room. I could sit in a room for 20 years and not come up with some of those ideas, because in a room by myself, all I'm going to keep doing is thinking Rob Bennett thoughts, and, you know, as good as some of them are, let's just say, some of them have some value. As good as those are, they're never going to match what I could get if I also heard from Wanderer and Fool Me Once and John Walter Russell and Petey Person, you know, Microlepsis, all these others. So what I did very quickly, I discovered this about the internet, that you could form these communities. And so, you know, that's why I founded that Retire Early community at Motley Fool, because I said, I want a community of people doing what I'm doing so that I can learn more about it and then write about it. And it worked, you know, it worked just beyond my wildest hopes with the development of that first book. And it's worked in the investing area. But in the investing area, there's been a little bit of friction, a little bit of rocky road. And that's because I don't want to say there's an alternate community. There's the community is poisoned by this idea that we call passive investing. And passive investing is a dogmatic idea. It's an idea that cannot be questioned. It falls apart upon questioning. And yet it's an idea that people have put lots of weight on. They've invested their retirement money pursuant to it. So a lot of people very, very, very much want to believe that passive investing is true. They want to believe it with their hearts, their minds, and their souls. But they are incapable of coming up with any reasoned, civil way of defending the idea if it's questioned. And that's a recipe for disaster. And that's what we saw. And that's what I'm doing battle with in all the work I do in the investing area. Something that Wayne said, if you listen to the podcast I had on Are You Woman Enough for Rational Investing, I talked about a fellow named Wayne who posted a letter to the editor at John Russell's site. And, you know, one of the things... trying to think what the I've lost my train of thought. Wayne was saying that I've lost it. I can't recall my point about Wayne, just the general idea. When he said Rob sounds wounded in his podcast. And what he was getting at is that I make a lot of references to these battles on the discussion boards about, you know, passive investing, should we allow honest posting on safe withdrawal rates, blah, 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 blah. You know, all these battles, you know. And I think when he's calling me wounded, I think what he's getting at, I don't want to put words into his head, but I think what he's getting at is, can't we just leave that aside? Can't we just... What Wayne would like me to do, I believe, is just tell people what I've learned and leave out all the discussion of the political battles for control of these discussion boards. You know, that's sort of yucky. You know, let's not talk about it. You're calling people dishonest. You're pointing death threats. You know, I don't want to hear that. Just tell me, you know, how should I invest? You know, P10 levels 15 today. What should I do? That I get the feeling that's what Wayne would like. And I understand where he's coming from, of course. It's not hard to understand. But I think to a large extent it misses the point of what rational investing is all about. And the reason it misses it is rational investing is not, you know, what I said in that earlier podcast is I said it's you can't reduce it to an equation where somebody's going to say, Eureka, I've got the answer. I figured it out. Here's the blackboard. X, you know, X times Y to the 11th power multiplied by Z squared. No. See, that's something Einstein sitting in a room maybe came up with, some great equation. Rational investing is you start out with some ideas on how to invest, and then you put them out, and you get feedback, and then you improve them. That's how the rational investing mindset works. It's a totally different head from passive investing, where you say, I've got science, you pound the table, and I will not be questioned. I have learned the answers. You listen. You learn. Write this down in your copybook. That's passive investing. Rational investing is, here's what I think. I've been thinking about investing, and here's what I think. And tell me what you think. And you learn. So that's why I don't say, well, PE 10, 15, you should have a stock allocation of 63%. And when it goes to PE 16, you should change that to 59%. And if it goes to PE 17, you should change it to 67%. There are no answers like that. I think that's idiotic. I can say, as a principle of rational investing, that as valuation levels go up, your stock allocation should go down. That I feel comfortable saying, but I don't feel comfortable giving you an exact percentage because there's just too many factors that have to be taken into account. It's a valuable thing to list the factors and to discuss them and to converse about them. But no one person is going to converse perfectly. I have limited life experiences. I can't give you the answers. If you listen to me and Fool Me Once and Petey Person and Microlepsis and John D. Craig and John Walter Russell and John Graney and Mel Lindauer and on. If you listen to all those people, I think you might come to a good answer, just like the book The Wisdom of Crowds says. But if we cut off, if we silence one group, you know, And the guy, the author of the book, The Wisdom of Crowds, says just this. He believes that this idea applies in the investing area. But he has a paragraph in the book that's very interesting, and he says, none of this works in a community where one side silences the other. It's a wonderful paragraph, and it just applies absolutely with what's going on in the retire early and indexing communities. So what he's saying is the idea that the community comes to the right answer doesn't work unless you allow different viewpoints to be voiced. And it's not just in the retire early and the indexing communities this has happened. It's happened everywhere. The reason I care about these communities is they are models for how the entire world works. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing community interaction. And so it's not just that the Vanguard diehards board that you can't talk about the failings of passive investing. That applies everywhere. That's why Scott Burns told us. He said, the reason I don't report the safe withdrawal rate accurately is it is information people don't want to hear. Scott Burns is capable of calculating the safe withdrawal rate accurately, but he dares not do it. And not because he wants to post that the Vanguard diehards board, because he has a column in the Dallas Morning News, and people are going to be after his head. So what we've done in these discussion boards is we've tested the idea. We've tested the idea of whether if the efficient market theory works or not. If we allowed honest posting, the efficient market, the market probably would be efficient. That you know, I think that's true. If you allowed all the different viewpoints to be aired, you know, fairly and reasonably and fully, people would figure out how they should invest, and the overall stock price would probably be pretty close to the right number. The market would indeed be efficient. The efficient market is not something it theoretically is possible, but the rub is that humans aren't like that. Humans are flawed creatures, and we have emotions, and when prices get too high, all our hopes get tied up in these fantasies that, you know, maybe valuations don't matter somehow, I don't know. And then we suppress people who talk about what the historical data teaches us, how stocks have always worked in the real world. So what I'm saying is that what goes on in these discussion boards is just a model for what goes on a much bigger scale at the world at large. And because of the silencing, because of the campaigns of terror, the deception, the intimidation, all this, because of all that, the efficient market theory doesn't work. The theory in the book Wisdom of Crowds does not work. So what do we need to fix it? In order to make the market more efficient, closer to what the passive investing people say it already is, wrongly, what they wrongly say, what we need to do to make it closer to that is to treat all members of our community fairly. And I don't just mean one or two boards. I mean the whole world. That means passive investing needs to become a less dogmatic strategy or way of thought, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. We don't need to eliminate passive investors. We don't need to ban them like they've banned rational investors. I like having passive investors post at my blog because they keep me honest. I believe in what I say strongly, and I can get carried away like any other human can. And having a passive investor there watching over me is a good thing because they're going to catch me when I say crazy things. They're going to pull me back. So that's good. But of course, the passive investors need that too. They need people catching them and pulling them back. And because valuations got so high, passive investing became very popular. And there's an old saying, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, think about it, passive investing advocates. Passive investors became powerful in the 1990s when their particular idea had a day in the sun, where it had a lot of success. And they got so popular and so powerful that they've elected to crush dissenting viewpoints in a way that no other advocates of no other investing philosophy try to crush dissenting viewpoints. And that's the downfall. That's the downfall of passive investing. That's why we've seen an $8 trillion loss as a result of this investing philosophy just in the last 12 months. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. When any investing philosophy becomes so popular that it becomes contemptuous of alternate viewpoints, that's a problem. And we need to retain, we know that. We know that from other areas of human endeavor. So all we need to do is take what we know from other areas of human endeavor and apply it to the investing realm. We know that, I mean, I challenged John Graney on a safe withdrawal rate study. I said, John, the methodology doesn't add up. And for a time, you know, we sort of went back and forth. And then ultimately I found Bill Bernstein's book, which says that I was right and John was wrong. Bill Bernstein says anyone using the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, he says, forget about it. Forget about it. If you've given any thought to using one of these studies to plan your retirement, you know, you're crazy. So John's response was to threaten to kill me and anybody else that posted honestly on safe withdrawal rates from that point forward. Now, say he had been an executive for one of the tobacco companies, and there were congressional hearings saying, you know, the tobacco companies they have commercials on television saying, smoke a cigarette a day, keep the doctor away. You know, smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, and that's the key to, you know, a good long life. And, you know, scientific evidence says otherwise. And we call these people into congressional hearings, and we say, you're telling us, you know, you're saying to young people, you know, start at 16, smoke a pack a day, you'll be healthy, you'll live long. The scientific evidence says the opposite. It says cigarettes kill. Cigarettes cause lung cancer. What do you have to say for yourself? And the guy stands up, and he starts screaming and beating the table, and he says, if anybody says cigarettes cause cancer, I'll go to their house with a baseball bat, and I'll kill their wife and children. You understand? Don't call me to testify ever again. You understand? You are banned. You, Senator, are banned. From, you know, from this whatever, this country, this Congress, I don't know what. Could anything be more insane? if you saw that play out, that little drama on your television, would you say, hey, those cigarette guys, they make a good case. That I'm thinking maybe I should take up smoking. Any reasonable person who saw such behavior would say, these cigarette people are, you know, they're off the reservation. But what rational investing says is we need to use those human skills we have developed, the human BS detector we all have within us, and we need to apply it to the passive investing advocates. When we hear people talking like crazed madmen, we need to say, slow down, fella. Get yourself together. We have some questions about your methodology. Could you please calm down and address the questions? And if you cannot calm down, you're going to have to leave our community. We have certain norms that we observe here. That's the way it should work. And the fact that it doesn't work that way says something very bad about passive investing. And we need to change that. We don't need to ban passive investing. We don't adopt the tactics that have failed and just try to, you know, be equally abusive coming from the other end. No. We learn from the errors. We learn from the mistakes made by the passive investing advocates. And we rise above them. I'll give a human example and close up. There's a guy named Earnabuck, and he was a fairly regular poster at the Vanguard Diehards. In one sense, he was certainly a friend of mine. In one sense, he was a defender of mine. In one sense, he was not. Earnabuck said that he did not agree with my investing ideas. However, he was strongly offended by the abusive tactics that were used to silence advocates of rational investing at the Vanguard Diehards board and valuation-informed indexing, which was more what we were discussing at the time Earnabuck was present. So he often was critical of Mel Lindauer and those who posted in defense of him. Mel Lindauer is one of the co-authors of the Boglehead's Guide to Investing. A highly abusive poster. So Earnabuck did not agree with me on the substance, but he agreed with me on the process. He said we should allow different sides to speak. He said Rob's always been polite to me. He's always, you know, gone to great efforts to answer my questions. He always gives reasonable answers, whether I agree with them or not. And Earnabuck said something one time that hit me on a deep level. He said, I used to participate back at the Motley Fool Board. This was a long time back. This was 2002. And he said, in the early days of those discussions, I used to think John Graney was right. John Graney has the old school study, and, you know, many big name people have endorsed the old school studies. They are used in every article on retirement planning you see. So I can understand why somebody would start out thinking they're right. And Earnabuck said, I thought they were right. I thought John was right. But he said, as the discussions continued, you know, I read the post back and forth, I came to understand that Rob is right. And I believe that now John is just, you know, he's leading these smear campaigns just because he doesn't want to admit he made a mistake. And, you know, he said, I think it's creepy. You know, many people are going to suffer horrible financial losses because this individual. And, you know, we should stop this. So this is where he was coming from. I, of course, agree, but the point I really want to make is not on the so much on the, well, it is on process, but a different process question. It's not on the direct question Earnabuck was addressing. What I really find fascinating about it, about that little comment is Earnabuck didn't agree with me for a long time. I don't know. It wasn't clear how long it took. It was months. It wasn't a day or two. It was clearly months that it took to persuade him. See, to me, the flaws in the old school studies are plain as day. You know, I feel like everyone should be persuaded in 5 minutes. To me, you know, valuations affect long-term returns. Long-term returns obviously affect the safe withdrawal rate. The old school studies don't have an adjustment for valuations, so they can't get the safe withdrawal rate right. To me, nothing could be more clear. But of course, I learned about the flaws in those studies back in, you know, 1995. So I've lived this for many years. So it's very clear in my head. And I try to explain it to people. I try to take them step by step. But if it's new to someone, and if they've heard so many people say it's right, I think it's hard for some people to let that for that to get in, for the thing to click. So what Earnabuck is saying is it took a while to click, but then it did. Well, I think that is such powerful testimony to the benefits of community. You see, Earnabuck, he was probably never going to learn about the flaws in the old school studies, because say that there was somebody else out there writing about the flaws of the old school studies. You know, say it was Robert Shiller. Earnabuck probably, I don't know what who he reads and who he doesn't read, but it may well be that he doesn't read Robert Shiller, because Robert Shiller doesn't have his investing ideas. So, you know, why would you, most people read people that they generally agree with. So Earnabuck might have never read Robert Shiller. Robert Shiller hasn't said anything on the old school studies. I'm just using him as an example, but just say, I think Earnabuck might have never learned about the flaws. But because he was in a community that had a diverse, you know, presentation of different viewpoints, he happened to be exposed to a viewpoint that otherwise he never would have known about. He didn't have a choice at the Motley Fool board. You know, he didn't have to say, I want a copy of Irrational Exuberance. He was part of that board for whatever reason. I don't know why, but there was something there he liked. And this guy, Rob Bennett, happened to be there, and so he happened to be exposed, and it turned into a big discussion, so he said, I'll listen in, and he ended up being persuaded. So he ended up learning something totally new. And this is why I react so negatively when people say discussion boards are worthless. It's a new communications medium, and it has great powers of its own. It has its weaknesses, like they all do. But it has strengths that no other communications medium possesses. So Earnabuck learned something new. Well, that's what I live for. I live for it for myself to learn new things, and I live for it to help others to learn new things. But that's an example of how community works. And it doesn't work. It's not just discussion boards. The United States is a community. The community of investors is a community. And we all need to be learning from each other. And we don't learn when the advocates of one investing philosophy say, we are science, we are right, we don't need to hear anybody else. We've got it all figured out. So we have the intellectual firepower today to take investing to places it's never been before, to take knowledge of how stock investing works to places it's never been before. But it's not going to happen until middle-class investors work up the courage and the fortitude, I think that's the word, to stand up to the passive investing dogmatist and say, no, you sit down, fella. Behave yourself. You agreed to follow certain rules when you were permitted into this community, and you will follow those rules. And if you do not, we will speak up in defense of the people you attack. We will not permit this behavior. And that helps everyone. That helps the abusive poster. That helps the entire community learn. That's why We have rules against the tactics that were used by the passive investing dogmatists to destroy our boards. Those rules are there for a purpose. They reflect human wisdom of thousands of years, not just hundreds of years, thousands of years. And we need to apply that wisdom today if we want to move ahead in our understanding of how stock investing really works, in our understanding, in our effort to understand why we've lost $8 trillion in the past 12 months, and what we need to learn to make sure it never happens again. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.